Welcome to CFRI Cystic Fibrosis Community Voices, a video podcast series created by and for the cystic fibrosis community.
Hello, and welcome to CFRI's CF Community Voices, coming to you from our home studio in Palo Alto, California. I'm Sue Landgraf, Executive Director of Cystic Fibrosis Research Incorporated, CFRI, and I'm very pleased to welcome our viewers and listeners. We have a very special program ahead, but before getting started, I want to thank our generous sponsors, Vertex Pharmaceuticals, Chiesa USA, Gilead Sciences, Genentech, and Proteostasis Therapeutics. I also would like to note that no information presented in this podcast is intended for a patient's diagnosis or treatment. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. Thank you, and let's get started.
So I want to just touch base about my volunteer experience here. What I've always appreciated that was that no matter how hard my day-to-day life was with CF, when I volunteered, I could see that other people had it harder. And some people had it easier. But for the most part, I could take my mind off of myself and focus on other challenges, and I could appreciate what I did have. And then I think Paul Quinton is the one that shared this with me, that we all have a need to be needed. We all need to be needed. That's a basic human instinct. And so being needed in a volunteer capacity really feels good. And that paying it forward for the next generation of patients with CF has been really important to me. Back in the day when we had camp, we used to encourage the kids with camp at camp to do their treatments and so on, and it felt really, really good to do that. I think sometimes we forget how healing service is for our own well-being. Okay, now I'm totally ignoring my notes. Okay. Okay, so I wanted to be a social worker because of my pediatric social worker who was instrumental in shaping me. And I went to graduate school and I worked for about 2 years and then had a really bad lung bleed and then I had to go on disability. And I thought, what a waste, you know, how many years of education did I have and I couldn't even work. But then there was CFRI. And I recognized that CFRI allowed me to be a social worker and to learn skills to facilitate groups and to coordinate conferences and things like that while on disability without a pressure to work 9 to 5, but help where I could. And so it taught me that the greatest weakness in my life, my CF, actually became my greatest strength. And this is a picture of me. I asked my husband to take this when I was pretty sick. I was end stage CF. And I had an IV, I had oxygen, I had a chest tube, chest vest, and nebulizer. And I thought, Andrew, you got to take a picture of me because I've got a tube coming out of almost every orifice. And I find it quite hilarious. But I would sit at that desk, and Karen Von Berg would be happy with me because I had the proper posture, breathing and typing to CFRI and conference attendees and things like that for hours on end around this time of year. And it was a great way to still feel like I was contributing even if I was in that kind of physical shape. So bottom line, while on disability, I still had purpose. And that's our wonderful conference committee circa 2010 or so. Yeah. And then I think this is, I think, a human need. We all need people to look up to. We all need mentors. And so this family is where I found my role models, my older sisters who are dealing with similar challenges and could pave the way and teach me what I could deal with. This disease has not been kind to me over the years. I had gone through a number of pretty traumatic, difficult physical challenges, massive hemoptysis and respiratory failure and being ventilated and so on. And so I had this picture in my mind because I knew people with CF who had been in the ER coughing up cups of blood and they survived. So I thought, oh, if he did it, I can do it. or people who were vented, who came off the ventilator, like Lisa here, if she could do it, so could I. And I think in my last talk 3 years ago, not that I expect you to remember this, but I gave you this acronym, NOOGTT. NOOGTT, N-O-O-G-T-T, which is like the yummy sweet candy that you find, which I love. NOOGTT actually to me is my sort of deep psychological foundation for how I live my life. And NOOGTT stands for not the only one going through this. Not the only one going through this. Everything I'm feeling, everything I've experienced has been felt and experienced by somebody else, probably a hundredfold, because I'm just one human on this planet. So that always gives me the sense that it's okay, I can handle this and I'm gonna do the best I can, but not to take things so seriously, like, oh, I'm the only one dealing with this. Not true. So the need to be understood, I touched upon that a little bit. What do I mean by that? I mean like emotional intimacy, because I'm a grief counselor and it really does surprise me, sadly, how many people live their lives without ever sharing their feelings with someone else, ever, not even their spouses. And I can't fathom that because I grew up in this community where sharing our feelings, sharing our experiences, our challenges has always been so basic, and why we're here. So I do think that having at least one friend with CF or friend in general with whom you can really truly be yourself and say, this stinks. You know, or this is hard, I'm struggling with this. Having one authentic, real relationship is really a basic part of quality of life. I wanted to share, like, for the record, I'm actually a very optimistic, positive person. I smile a lot, but I need to be real. That's what I mean by authentic. So most of the time, it's Andrew, my husband, who has to deal with my chronic, constant complaining, because I do need an outlet to talk about how sometimes life is really hard and life is really unfair. So I think there's no such thing as a Pollyanna. If there is, then those people probably hold it all in and then get sick. But I think it's okay as people with CF to express positive and negative emotions. So the CF community showed me all these things are possible. And some of you are sitting in this room that you can be a doctor, a screenwriter, you can travel the world, social worker, professor, we've got one here, lawyer, computer engineer, economist, musician, viniculturist, teacher, graphic, blah, 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 right? The list goes on and on. These are all friends of mine that have CF. And I just wanted to list this to show some of the younger parents that the sky's the limit. The future is full of possibilities for your children. Once they discover what they're good at and pursue that, that they too can find a rich and meaningful career and job out there, and possibly even be a parent and an athlete. So there I am. And then I also think that embracing CF in my identity is partly feeling proud. And pride is also seen as a little bit of a negative emotion, but pride is really important when we want to feel good about a challenge like having CF. So when I look at this picture, I feel incredibly proud because these are the four women that won the silver medal. If only those Brits weren't so good, we would actually have the gold, but we are silver at the World Transplant Games 1 month ago. And I'm especially proud. Thank you. I'm especially proud that three of those four women are CF double lung recipients. And doesn't that rock? I mean, that seriously rocks. Not that we need a disclaimer, but sometimes I think it's important to find things that we do in our life and we feel proud about despite having CF. So I'm really proud that I'm a strong swimmer because I'm swimming with someone else's lungs, and that's a miracle to me. Or that I'm a triathlete, and that I could do this 13 years post-transplant. So it's not arrogance, I hope, and I hope it's not, but it's just this sense that I can do things even with this medical history. So I know many of you can actually sit and give this talk yourselves, but what did this community actually teach me over my life, the 27 years I've been involved? They taught me about different medicines, clinical trials, treatments, all the stuff we learned in the last day and a half. They taught me to be physically active, exercise, 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 which thankfully I grew up in a family with that culture, but I never actually, put it together that that's good for us. They taught me definitely to enjoy life, to be silly, to laugh no matter how hard things get. They also taught me to be disciplined. Pardon my English, but work your ass off to survive, because that's that fight to live that we all need so much. And Stephen Levine is a famous author in the end of life world, and he always says to be strong enough to be weak, to be strong enough to show your vulnerabilities, to cry, to really say it like it is. So what happened to this community with cross infection? Let's face it, there are ways for us to hang out together. You can always touch someone's butt because there's no germs on that, especially if you're Anna Maudlin. And she has always appreciated my butt. The CF retreat is a place we can connect with, one, because we're all screened for harmful bacteria, and two, because most of our events are outdoors, and that just being in the fresh air, if somebody coughs, you step away, the wind blows, and you feel a lot safer. And we can, of course, nowadays connect online, and that's such a saving grace to the cross-infection dilemma that was created about 10, 15 years ago. I do believe the cross-infection dilemma is the greatest tragedy on our community that has happened. But I also think it's a wonderful way this community in particular teaches us how to be aware of our sputum cultures and how to behave in ways to keep our secretions to ourselves and not spread them. Anna and I went on countless book tours and film tours and would meet CF patients across the country, and they would like come up to us and say, "Hi, nice to meet you," and want to shake our hand, and we're like, "Ugh, don't do that." But they had never been trained how to engage with other people with CF. So I realize you are eating lunch, but my next slide is the reality of CF being a cruel disease. CF is a cruel disease. I don't need to tell you. Those are my lungs when they were taken out of me. There was no functional lung tissue remaining. So I breathed my very last breath with my lungs 13 years ago. And even though many people are living well now, and it's many people are living longer, I hear in the stories and in the faces of young parents that this is still an incredible, difficult challenge to live with day in and day out. Partly because of the uncertainty, but partly in terms of the day-to-day mechanics and effort of just staying alive. So I just want to, you know, emphasize that reality that still exists. But it certainly, where's Ed, is made easier when there's someone to hold your hand. This is Ed Kinney holding my hand just about 4 days after my transplant. So. And just like when we receive support, we are then in a position to give support. So CF was there for me for the highs of my life. I remember there was a waiting room, and is Devin here? Devin was speaking in a tape recorder, and a bunch of maybe some of the other friends of mine were speaking in the tape recorder, all praying and mobilized to support and help me survive when I was in a very, very difficult place. So that worked. Thank you. So, whoops. I'm sorry, I'm getting all crazy here. So when Ed is holding my hand, I'm in a position to hold somebody else's hand. That's Anna. And we celebrate together. So CFRI was there for me for my highs, and CFRI was there for me for my lows when I had to say goodbye to Anna 3.5 years ago. So I'm just, it's so important. The grief counselor has arrived, so I'm gonna say a couple of things. I counsel people who've lost a loved one regularly, daily, that's my job. And it is really, really tragic. Death is not the tragedy. The tragedy is when somebody is all alone in their suffering. And so people die alone all the time, and then people grieve alone. When, say, there's a daughter, an adult daughter, who never got married and never had children, and the mother was sick, and she moved in with her mother and took care of her mother for 15 years, and then the mother dies, and now she's all alone. And it's tragic for me to witness those people who have no community, zilch, zero, no friends, never had time to socialize. And when Anna died, even though she was my twin and the core fire in my life to keep me going, I had all of you. And I, most importantly, I had my family, but I had all of you. So I'm very grateful for that. But the only downfall, really, maybe besides cross-infection, which I think is highly overrated, is loss. When we love people in this community, we also face losing them. But I do believe this is the price we pay to love each other. To me, when we lose someone, like, for example, Anna with her colon cancer, I was extremely motivated to figure out the CF cancer link. And just like many of you, when we face a challenge, we're motivated even more. We got to figure out how to stop this disease. And I feel like no matter how much I've lost, and I've lost many friends, the inspiration, the joy of the friendship always, always outweighs the grief and the sadness. I do believe that my one of the kids at camp, like before she died about 15 years ago, she said, "I just want to be remembered." And I think being remembered in this community takes on a deeper significance, because our death was not in vain. Our death was to mobilize all of you guys to go find the cure. Does that make sense? I do believe that we teach each other how to keep living. A number of you in this room have taught me how to keep going without my loved one, with CF. And that's one of the most important types of wisdom we need as human beings, how to pick up from the ground and start moving and start walking again. No matter how old we are, whether it's CF or cancer or whatever other challenge or disease, you get laid off from a job, you need to pick up and move forward and find a new job. So I think this is one of the life's lessons that we learn in the CF community. And I just share this historic picture. This is the year that I met the legendary Beth Suffian and the legendary Julie Desch, 1996, I think it was, at the conference, and that's when we had a very large community of CF adults. And sadly, in this community, there are about, and Elise Goldberg is there, there are about 4 of us living. That's really, really tragic. Bingo, you are one of them. Thank you. So there's a lot of loss, but I did learn over the years that I am stronger than my losses. I'm just sharing this slide because of some of the young parents here, that this might be the scary part of being part of this community, but I just want to really reassure you that that this is just one part of the community, and the richness, the resilience that exists in this community is far, far, far greater than the loss. So this is one of my coping strategies, the mantra that I even use with my identical twin sister, that's their story and I have mine. And I don't know how my story is going to unfold, but I have my own. And I think we all need to remind ourselves of that when we hear these sad stories about people with CF dying. So one of my little bits of wisdom from my life to share is that don't put all your emotional eggs in one basket. As a twin, I could have done that. I could have just been married to my twin sister and really just sort of been this weird, codependent, unhealthy bond. But thankfully, my mother being a social worker and having the healthcare team divide us in the clinic room and all of that, we did learn to become independent from each other, but that we have to have connections outside of just our comfort zone. So I have my CF community, but I also have, as Jim mentioned, my bagpiping community. I have my hospice community, which is where I work. I have my transplant community, Team NorCal there, Team Northern California, my gym. I have a wonderful group of friends at the pool and at the gym. And I have my Stanford community. So if I somehow lose one of these communities, if I can't bagpipe anymore, if I can't work anymore in hospice, I will have the others to fall back on. And CFRI has always been the community that I fell back on the most. Finally, I do strongly believe that hope is the best medicine. We have to have optimistic attitude. Now is the best time to have optimism compared to 20 years ago. And the best is yet to come. And that's something we can all sort of share with each other. When one of you gets down, the other one picks you up. And in this community, we do a lot of that. The hope is stronger when it's shared. There's a Chinese proverb that I sort of adopted as a twin. Joy shared is joy doubled. Sorrow shared is sorrow halved. And so I'm using this for hope. And the daffodil, of course, is the flower of hope. So that's really my story. My life is my message, as Gandhi said. This is Anna and me in 2002, 15 years ago when we were young. and I just feel so grateful to be part of this family. And I also, I feel like what I say is blah, blah. But I really appreciate that you're interested in hearing, and Siri, thank you for inviting me. And if any of you are interested, I do have a book, my books and film, if you're interested in getting those. But otherwise, I just want to thank you all so much for taking time out of your busy weekend in July to be with us and to celebrate with us our 30 years. And here's to growing older together, right? So thank you.
Thank you, Issa. I think we're all disappointed that you did not bring your bagpipes, though. That's we were hoping.
My eyeball would pop out.
We do have time for a few questions. Do please remember the hygiene protocol when using the microphone. Thank you.
Hi, Devin.
Is there the wiper? Oh, okay. So, is it working? Okay. How do you deal with being the most wise person, ever?
I'm not. But I also have, the most funny friend and, all, you're that. And everybody has their little talent and their little place. You're my funny friend, Devin.
Issa, I just really, really wanted to thank you. You have been an inspiration for us, not as a CF community, but I know for me. I wish my daughter could be here, but because of her infection, she can't. And I completely agree with you that isolation from other CF people, the kind of connection that you were able to make when you were younger, it's really missing from our life. And that's a shame, but understandable.
Right.
But hey, go.
Thank you. I think the challenge for the younger generation is there a need for them to get together, or not to get together, is there a need for them to know somebody else with CF? Because if our younger generation is not brought up educated and informed and in this kind of community, they may never develop the need or interest in meeting friends with CF. And when I say meet friends, I mean online, especially.
May I be so bold as to ask us all to have a moment of silence and take in what we've heard? A moment of silence, please.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you. Bless your heart. You know, I'm in the South, they always say, bless your heart. It's like, we should say, bless your lungs.
I think you know we all adore you. But for people who haven't read Anna and Issa's book, you really need to. It is so beautifully written. And I remember the first time I read it, I was towards the end, and John walked in, and I'm bawling. And he said, are you all right? I said, it's got a happy ending. It's got a happy ending. I just have to get there. But it is brilliantly written. And so if you haven't read it, get it and read it. It's wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Appreciate it. And what is a happy ending, right? What does that mean? Now it's half of a happy ending because the afterword is about Anna's passing, but I truly believe it's still a happy ending because she was 41. Yeah.
Thanks, Issa. Your talk resonates in a scholarly fashion to me. Surprise,
of course.
because in disability studies, we talk about trying to reframe disability as not always being horrible or bad or unwanted or undervalued, but generative. And so a lot of the strategies that we come up with or the insights that we have as disabled people with CF are very generative. So I thank you for raising that and trying to reframe the conversation. So I guess in my own experience, and I'm hoping maybe you can give me some advice or at least comment on this, two of the biggest challenges for me has been facing discrimination and I guess reconciling limitation. So, you know, not taking a position because it's going to require more work and I don't think I can handle that, or not having a biological child, or but also discrimination by other people, either in the workplace or by in dating or societally. Right. So I'm wondering if you have some reaction or advice or, yeah.
Yeah, that's fabulous, Sandy. Thank you. Thank you. Next year, conference committee speaker, please. So take note. First of all, discrimination. So when I talked about that slide about confronting or denying your disease, owning CF, I think discrimination is one of the costs of being open with our illness, particularly with certain people and in certain settings. And so it is a very delicate dance, choosing where to be open and where not to be, particularly in light of like Facebook. I have a couple of coworkers in my Facebook page, so they immediately knew that I had cancer in my eye and I had heart surgery in October and all of that. It's like, whoops. But at the same time, I think everyone has their own story and their own challenge. And I think if you work in high tech, it's competitive and rough. And for anyone, regardless of health condition, for me, my personal path was to go into a field where my illness would be embraced rather than discriminated upon. And so in my job now, I am actually, and if I can say this without, is not pride, but I'm just saying I'm highly regarded as an expert in death and dying. It's like, I'm laughing, like that's kind of woohoo, right? But because I've actually been there. So I've just been very fortunate, Sandy. So I can't say a whole lot about discrimination, except when my functional capacity becomes more and more limited, I may not be able to keep up with the demands of the job. So that's something I have to face as my reality. And like our panel said before, Paul Quinton said, live in the now, live in the now, and develop allies. I think, I hope my point of my talk is social skills is such an important part of living well with CF. So, I mean, back in the day, you had kids who maybe didn't go to school and maybe didn't learn how to engage with kids. And so nowadays, I think that's the most important skill a child can develop, to develop allies and friends and supporters in the work environment so that if there is discrimination, there are people to defend you. You're not on your own. And the other thing was reconciling with your limitations is huge. Next time I'm asked to give a talk, that will be my title. Because I think we all, whether you have CF or not, if you're aging, or if you have your own health issues, you have to learn how to say no. My parents are probably looking at me going, you don't know what you're talking about. Because I don't say no a lot, and I learn to push. And so I think I can't answer that with any kind of wisdom, but I will share one story. And that is that when Anna was at the end stage of her cancer, she was admitted to the hospital for, you know, another blockage. And there was a nurse at Stanford. We'd never seen him before. He was a traveler. And he was, I hope I'm saying it right, Chimayan. He was a native of Guam. That's where he came from, a native people from Guam. And he basically, when Anna was like, oh, look at me, I look like shit, I look like just sort of self-deprecating, which is really easy to do with CF. And he's like, no, stop. What are you talking about? CF, I mean, we need sick people. We need to learn from sick people. You are our teachers. And I tell you, if the nurses are here, that was the most compelling thing a nurse has ever said to me, to Anna and me, I was there. To say that there is a role for us as sick people to teach others how to live. Because all of us, guess what, we'll all be there someday, and we learn from each other. So I just share that wisdom in a sense of when I do have to limit, when I have to say no, when I have to quit my job, which I've done before because of my illness, I want to also remind myself that I am showing others how to set limitations and how to accept the body's limitations. Sorry, I hope I answered that question. Thank you. Hello, my dear Devin.
I have a more serious question this time. How do you deal with grief over the short term where you're just trying to get back on your feet versus the long term where, you know, you miss everybody and it's lessened, but it still pops up and you still need to deal with it so that your life goes smoothly?
I think that's a great question. How to deal with grief in the short term? Is that what you said? Both. Okay. Well, I think everybody has their own way of coping. Because I think I grew up with a physical illness and learned to read my body, in the acute period, I won't say it was short, but like in the first year after Anna died, for me, the most important thing was being physically tuned in. Because most of the time, I felt like this, and I was just holding everything in, and it was so tight. And even my breathing got all screwed up, which is why I went to physical therapy, which is probably CF and grief together. But sort of being body aware, and even what Dr. Mark talked about, like being sort of mindful of your body and where there's tension and breathing and enacting that parasympathetic nervous system and just being present in my body was really important. And just to tie in Sandy's question, I would say setting limits. saying no to extra stress, saying no to things, even though that was the year CFRI asked me to speak. and I did. There was a lot of agony involved with that too. But I would just, I'm joking. But I would just say that to read yourself in the beginning of grief and see how you react to it. And I'm a huge believer, just like our panel said, to embrace joy, beauty, pleasure in the face of acute grief. So I have a picture in one of my PowerPoints of me at the trampoline gym 3 weeks after Anna died. It was partly because she had a Groupon coupon that was expiring and she would have said, "What a waste, you have to use it." So I started jumping up and down at the trampoline gym and I actually had a wonderful time. Again, I think because I'm a physical person, I could move the grief and the tension out of my body by jumping up and down like an idiot. So I just share with you that joy is huge in dealing with loss. Yeah. Vata. It's the showdown.
I don't have a question for you, but just an observation. Some 45 years ago, we were holding two little babies.
Yes.
And the future looked very bleak, frankly speaking. So what has happened in those 45 years is just beyond my imagination.
Exactly.
How did life change you into such a wonderful, strong person? and it is... It is really a wonderful miracle, and maybe it is CF. So I do agree that it shaped your character and your ability and your will to life.
Yes.
So congratulations, and I'm very proud to be your father.
Thank you, Dad. I hope all the young parents out there heard that CF, it's character building, and I know I've said this before, it's F-O-G, right? It's fog. CF is fog. Fucking opportunity for growth. I'm sorry, I have such a filthy mouth. So thank you, Dad. That was very touching to hear directly from you, and I can't emphasize the impact that you and Mom have had in raising me to be a well-rounded human being. And a family culture makes all the difference. And I hope those young parents here can ask yourselves, how did my parents deal with hardship? How did my grandparents deal with hardship? What tools did we use? And if my parents weren't born in wartime in Germany and Japan, I don't know if we would have had the skills to deal with this level of a challenge. But through their deep, deep efforts, kind of like what you guys are dealing, I'm still around, and Anna was around. She was alive and well until this unfortunate cancer, but I appreciate my parents tremendously. So on that note, I think I'll probably step down, but thank you all so much for listening.